It's the Wiggins Sessions, a show where key thinkers and industry pioneers discuss politics, economics, philosophy, and history. Big ideas impacting the economy, the financial markets, and our lives. Here's your host, Addison Wiggin.
Welcome to the Wiggin Sessions. I'm Addison Wiggin. Just last week, I had a Zoom call with my good friend, Ronan McMahon. He was enjoying a glass of Irish black tea in his boat hole in Cork, Ireland. Last time I talked to him, I think he was in Tulum in Mexico. Ronan is the editor of Real Estate Trend Alert. He travels the globe in search of real estate opportunities for profit. And that's why we like to talk to him. In my session, we discussed international travel constraints caused by the pandemic, which is an obvious, fantastic condo deals in Panama and Portugal, he's been tracking down, skyrocketing property prices as more people are on the move. They're moving out of cities. They're looking for other places to live. And they could do so because of what we're doing right now, podcasts and Zoom. And what he calls, and this, I'll just leave this to you guys, property porn. If you're ready, let's jam.
Welcome to the Wiggins Session, surviving and thriving in the post-pandemic economy. Do you think that's actually true, Ronan?
Absolutely.
I don't think we're post yet, but this is episode.
You had me on thriving. I just heard thriving.
We're thriving,
Addison.
Okay. Well, we have Ronan McMahon with us. And I think, when was the last time we talked? Like 3 months ago. But Ronan runs Real Estate Trend Alert. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the retail market in real estate globally. So welcome first, I guess, is probably the best thing to say. Welcome, Ronan.
It's always a good time. Thanks, Addison. Lovely to see you as always.
Where are you right now?
Addison, I'm in Cork, Ireland, and I'm in my childhood bedroom, would you believe? Because when I...
Literally, that's where you grew up?
Literally, this is where I grew up. We were really poor back then, so we didn't have the bay window, so this has been knocked in since, and we definitely didn't have double glazing, but...
Double glazing looks kind of nice.
Yeah, and the greenery is lovely. I'm back in Cork, my hometown of Cork, for the summer, which I like to spend all my summers here. And my home in Cork is on the other side of town, but that's a little home in a golf resort that's attached to a hotel, and the hotel Wi-Fi went out this afternoon. So I did what all good Irish boys do, and I made a bolt for home. Bolt for the mammy for dinner and to catch up with you.
And get some corned beef and hash, maybe.
Lovely stuff, pork with applesauce and roast potatoes. And I still have my tea here. I think the interesting thing for me about coming back to Cork is I start drinking black breakfast tea again, which I never do anywhere else.
Yeah.
But it's the go-to drink here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like it when I go there too. And you have some in your hand.
I do.
All right. So let's talk about your travels lately, because they sound kind of interesting. Just mostly the pandemic has thrown a wrench in things. And the last time we talked, it sounded like things were kind of sorting themselves out. But let's catch up. It sounds like it got more complicated.
Yeah. I mean, I guess kind of. So the last time we spoke, I was in Cabo and Los Cabos. In Mexico. That's my base for the winter. From there, I came to Portugal. So just top level, Addison, to remind you and your viewers and listeners how I organize myself. So I spend my winters in Los Cabos in Mexico. Spring and fall is in Portugal. And then I'm back in Ireland for the summer when we get long summer evenings like this. And my beat is traveling the globe in search of real estate opportunities for profit. So I guess it's just been a phenomenally interesting and just bizarre time, you know? I mean, I've stepped up from the dinner table here, you know, chatting with my sister who's house hunting at the moment. And it is just an absolute friggin' nightmare. You know, zero inventory, prices going through the roof. You would think we're in some kind of economic fragility, you would think. But, you know, just values are just soaring, you know, and in some instances in touristy parts of Ireland, prices have as much as doubled since pre-pandemic levels. So it's a surreal, complex, and very kind of nuanced environment that I'm operating in that varies very, very significantly from market to market, you know?
Okay, so let's, we actually started the last conversation that we had with Ireland, but I'd like to go through the other places that you've been to, but what do you attribute to the market rising in Ireland? Because like I'm here in Baltimore and we've made Baltimore our home for a variety of reasons, mostly the diversity that we enjoy here, but the prices have been just going crazy. And so it sounds like maybe the same thing. So do you think that there's like a pandemic involvement with that, or is it Fed spending? Is it the euro trying to like compete with dollars? Like, how do you process?
Yeah. So, I mean, I see a very rapid acceleration of a situation that I've basically been calling for since 2010, 2011. So in Ireland, we had this massive run-up of real estate prices. We had this massive oversupply and financial bubble up to 2007, 2008. Then that all crashed. The entire banking and real estate sector went under, went into zombie mode. We have an industry from the perspective of banking, construction, and also from a permitting environment that basically has been shuttered. So we just had this massive constraint on supply. And this kind of hit me like an epiphany. I think it was 2010 or 2011. And I guess you had sent Chris Mayer over to investigate the situation in Dublin. He was very bullish on Kennedy Wilson at the time, I recall. I think Kennedy Wilson had just, you know, invested $1 billion in crisis opportunities in Ireland. It seemed like such a huge amount of money at the time. And Chris and I sat down with the CEO and he just went through this constraints on creating new supply line item by line item, from the ability of anyone anywhere in Ireland to object to any type of construction at any moment, to the limitations on density. And, you know, basically, there is just this massive supply constraint on new real estate in Ireland at a time when the demographic factors were surging. So even back then, 2010, 2011, in the immediate kind of vicinity of where we were talking, you had Google sprouting up with major presence. You had LinkedIn, you had the International Financial Services Center. You had just all this multinational investment converging in this area, huge job growth, almost no capacity for supply to grow.
And that's still going on, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So basically, you've got a multinational sector, which is tech and pharma heavy, you know, just literally 7 minutes out the road from me. You know, Apple have, just a presence that creates more profits than the GDP of half the countries on Earth. We have a huge multinational sector here that provides, you know, lots of well-paying jobs. Those have surged ahead. And then you've also had this remote working trend. You've had lots and lots of people relocating from places like London. So for example, there's a very pretty town called Kinsale that's just half an hour west of Cork City. You know, I'm told, you know, mutual friends of ours compare it to Annapolis. It's that kind of vibe. It's 10 minutes from Cork Airport. prices there have, again, you know, in at the high end of the market have doubled since COVID. A lot of people relocating from London. You're 10 minutes from Cork Airport, easy hop to London. So it's been, and again, all of this, you know, mortgage rates are falling. You know, it's just, Addison, it's just really, really weird because everyone...
Well, all right, so how much of that do you attribute to the pandemic itself? Because people are like, in a way, they're just kind of stuck there, the ones that are already there. But then there's like, there's kind of constraints on travel and stuff like that. So,
yeah. So, I mean, in terms of the impact of the pandemic, we've got a pharmaceutical sector and a tech sector that's been a huge beneficiary from the pandemic. We've got beautiful countryside, open spaces, empty rural hinterland and nice small towns that have been a big beneficiary. And
it's nice to be there too.
Yeah, exactly. And then the sectors of the economy that have been negatively impacted, tourism and entertainment and all that. I mean, I guess they've been very heavily sheltered by, you know, government payments, government stipends. I really don't know how this is all working, but those businesses seem to have been remodeling. You know, many of them are reemerging now with fancier experiences. Retail in Ireland has been hit very hard. A lot of the dinosaurs that I guess were kind of going out of business anyway, you know, that's been accelerated. So just here in Cork, you know, Gap closed a couple of weeks ago. Debenhams, which is a major UK department store chain, they're gone. So on the high street, in terms of retail, there's a bit of scarring, but other than that, everyone seems to be busy. Everyone seems to have money. I don't know, Addison. There's
I'm just laughing because how does that compare? You're talking to us from your childhood room. So how does it compare to when you were growing up? That's just a question. Oh,
yeah. I mean, this. So it's very interesting. When I came back and spent a summer. Or a summer in Ireland a few years ago, I kind of reconnected with my home golf club and joined a team. And I was just like, it was just so weird to me because growing up, you know, people in our golf club here did kind of normal jobs. You know, they were an accountant for the gas utility, or they were a teacher, or they were a civil servant, or they worked in a bank. You know, now the people are doing these really specialized multinational, you know, international things, working in tech, working in pharma, you know, trading derivatives for this little thing that goes in, this little component that goes into a computer, completely different in terms of
if you think about it, it's much like yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ireland has just undergone this just massive transformation from the time when I first went into university to today. You know, when I first went into university, there was the full expectation of emigration being needed. And, you know, since then, we've just changed it. We've just become this net attractor of people from right across the world.
I still think, and we talked about this before, but I still think that's a factor of the taxation policy that was put in place.
Without doubt. And this is another very interesting one because, of course, that's under attack now with this recent kind of global tax initiative. Yeah. But no one here seems to be that worried about this either. It's very interesting because lots of my contacts from right across the world are saying, you know, is everyone freaking out in Ireland because Ireland's going to lose its advantage? And I don't know, either hubris has crept in or they know something we don't know, but no one seems to be that worried about it.
Oh, in a way, like as long as the money's being printed.
Like, yeah, yeah.
And worry that much.
Yeah.
So you can afford your tax bill and your mortgage. Like people don't give a shit really.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's very interesting, Addison, because, you know, growing up through this type of economic, you know, transformation that just drove real estate values through the roof, you know, it's given me a very good grounding for stepping out and going to a Panama, going to a Portugal, you know, going to other places and just seeing these kind of similar trends unfold and just seeing how they can just kind of drive real estate values through the roof. And, you know, Panama's an interesting one because, you know, Panama over the past two decades is sucking in all these multinationals, got a very welcoming tax policy. It's attracting people, businesses, just mobile stuff are being sucked in into an environment that, like Ireland, is very safe, very stable, you know, transparent, general trust in institutions. And it's a great platform if you're mobile and if you're doing business within their region.
Yeah, that's part of what I wanted to talk about when we were like setting up to have the conversation today. You set up, I think there was five, I'm going to say there's five different locales that you're interested in. And also I've been getting your texts and I'm like, man, the deals you're coming up with are amazing.
Yeah. So it's like,
so it's gotta be kind of interesting. And so let me frame that question in a different way. Like we were already talking about like how the pandemic has changed the economy. But how has it specifically changed your agenda? Because you gave me, I think I'm literally looking, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You gave me 6 different locations that you're looking at. And then following your texts, you've been putting out deals like probably once a month at least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess one standout thing in terms of the pandemic and our deal flow, and that is that Panama has created this incredibly generous tax incentive scheme for folks to invest in tourism infrastructure. So Panama over the past two decades has been extremely successful at attracting financial services, at attracting all sorts of other multinationals, but their tourism industry has lagged. So just around when the pandemic was hit, their new airport, or well, their airport, which had doubled in their capacity, had just been open. They're looking to fill that airport. They're looking to develop a much bigger tourism industry. And to do this, they've created these amazing incentives for developers and investors to create tourism infrastructure. And that tourism infrastructure includes apartments and homes that are made available for short-term rental to vacationers.
So you can earn income that way. But can you go there right now? Yes,
you can go to Panama now. Panama was closed for a long time. Panama is now open. Addison, the only place in terms of my movements that hasn't been open for me has been the US.
When we were talking about it, I was like, what?
Yeah, so this thing, this was just so weird. So, well, I had flights booked, et cetera, to fly to New York on the 22nd of October. Contacts and colleagues were coming from different places. We were going to be meeting in New York for 2 or 3 days. And then from there, I was going on to Panama. And then I just realized non-Americans can't fly from Europe to the US at the moment. Now, I can fly from Mexico to the US, Mexico, where COVID is rampant at the moment. But there are a number of countries that you can't fly to from the US, countries like China, India, Brazil,
France.
There's Iran.
It's just open.
No, Iran. And then everywhere in
Canada.
everywhere.
I'm making a joke about Canada because as we're talking, they just opened yesterday.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny.
it's a really weird thing. And so, you know, you think of somewhere like I had kind of taken the view that the New Yorks would reemerge as destinations for tourism, destinations for meetups like this.
They'd be like, this really happening.
No, it's not. And that's been my experience. So I put out a text. I was there saying, geez, guys, you know, I might not be able to make this. And like within 30 seconds, it was like, why don't we do it in Panama? You're going to Panama anyway. You know, we can all just go to Panama. It's as easy for everyone. And maybe the weather will be nicer end of October. So we're all just so mobile now. And things, you know, there is just no reason to be that New York would have this great draw unless there was some amazing vibrancy. So it kind of hit me, you know, saying that this idea of these cities becoming destinations for this type of thing, you know, it might not be might not quite play out like that.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we go over, I like your agenda here. I actually have it.
Yeah, so where
Ireland, Portugal, Spain, Riviera, Playa del Carmen, Tulum, Panama, Cabo.
So these are my movements, Addison, over the next 3 months. And each place, you know, I'll be traveling to and spending time in for very specific reasons. So from Ireland, I go to Portugal, and Portugal is extremely interesting in terms of opportunity at the moment. You know,
is it in the Algarve?
So I'm an investor for profit in the Algarve, and then where I live and where I spend time is on the Silver Coast north of Lisbon. So Portugal has come up with these incredibly attractive residency packages. So I'm a Portugal resident, and they have a tax program for, you know, people who fall into different buckets, and where you can pay tax rates that range from 0 to 20%, which would be versus the 50 to 55 I'd pay in Ireland. So it's extremely attractive for me and many other people in a similar situation to base themselves in Portugal. And then you have in the Algarve, you have this surging tourist, surging tourist demand. You have this in places like Lagos on the western edge of the Algarve. You have growing demand. It's been I won't say inundated.
Yeah, that's like the farther tip, right?
It's the farther tip, Addison. But I mean, the piece of land is so small, you're still only talking an hour and 20 minutes from Faro Airport, which is the major international airport in the Algarve. So it's a beautiful historic city. It's a very, very interesting place because in one small city, you've got a historic core, you've got a modern marina area, you've got long, wide, sandy beaches, and then you've got these amazing coves and cliffs that are kind of quintessential of the Algarve. And it's a place.
And you have a lot of English and Irish tourists.
You have quite a few. I don't want to say anything derogatory about those Irish and English, but it's it's kind of classy in a way that there aren't that many English and Irish pubs. So it's kind of classy and low key. And there's a very big hotel shortage and very big demand for short term.
Has that been also impacted by the pandemic? Because that's an issue in the US. Like,
hotels are decimated.
Yeah.
In the Algarve, it's just been amazing. I was just spent the morning looking at data from a short-term rentals management company, looking at kind of year-on-year comparisons of occupancy. And in Lagos, for example, the type of short-term rental that was maybe getting 40 weeks occupancy in pre-pandemic last year was getting just down a bit, maybe about 35 weeks occupancy, which is just staggering when you consider hotels dropped to close to zero or were closed, you know. So that sector of quality short-term rentals remained incredibly robust, even when we had all these
briefs, actually.
Very encouraging, you know. Plus, again, you know, it's all this, not to bang on about it too much, but it's just all an acceleration of what was happening anyway. You know, more people moving for remote work, more retirees, more fluidity, more flexibility.
Yeah. Do you see that persisting? Let's say the economy and the tourist economy reopens the way that, like, sort of the, I guess the common idea is that people think it's just the economy is going to open back up. Do you see that trend of people moving to remote locations because we know how to do it now?
Yeah, I firmly believe that that genie is out of the bottle and it's not going back. Now, there's a machine trying to push it back. You know, we're inundated. Well, I mean,
there's a bunch of real estate owners in New York City that would prefer that people don't move to the Algarve.
Exactly. You know, without doubt, there will be some gravitation back to offices, and, you know, a lot of people will go back to work on the office. But, you know, all this is, it just takes such a tiny percentage of people to move from office space to the Lagoshes of the world to just completely transform the dynamic of those real estate markets. You know, I mean,
all right. So this is a question I wanted to ask you just while reading and getting your texts and stuff like that. Isn't this the way the world used to work before we all moved to cities?
I
used to live in these country towns and they're beautiful places to live. I grew up in New Hampshire, and we live in Baltimore, but we spend time in this place called Havre de Grace, which is like right on a river. It's beautiful, small town. And during the pandemic, anyway, people migrated to these smaller places, and the real estate prices have been going through the roof in places that you would want to spend time. But it feels like a reversion to the mean.
I absolutely. And like, I mean, we had, like, I mean, you go to a town in the French countryside and you've the winemaker's house and the cheesemaker's house and the priest's house. And, you know, those kind of jobs are kind of gone or changed, but now we can be back in these places, you know, writing the daily reckoning or writing our real estate letter or doing. And it's fundamentally, the genie is out of the bottle, because it sucks to sit in traffic for an hour and a half every day. Like, I think the genie is out of the bottle because it just doesn't make sense that everyone, whether you're a morning person or a night owl, all go to an office and sit at your desk for X amount of time. And, you know, again, Addison, I'm not saying, you know, in a chunk of our business here, you know, we feel very strongly everyone involved in that needs to be in the office. And, you know, whether it's a customer care team or whether it's a sales team, these are groups that need the energy and the vibrancy and feeding off each other.
I mean, just in our own business, there's a cultural thing that you got to cultivate, and you got to, like, bring people in and explain what we do.
Yeah. That's the huge challenge. I mean, that's the huge challenge I see from this new way of working. And it's interesting because I feel like it's almost like another thing that puts these kind of debt-laden, skill-limited, you know, newcomers to the workforce at such a big disadvantage, you know?
Yeah, I worry about what they're going to find when they, you know, they try to get jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
Or just even if I try to, like, we've been talking about starting smaller businesses. If if we do start smaller businesses, what kind of help are we going to find? I mean, we just literally in the last 2 years, we destroyed the economy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe a good question to ask is like, what does that do to global real estate prices? Because we, like, our family has property in Nicaragua at the ranch, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're going around visiting different like condo projects. You're also looking at raw land. I think that we even visited some raw land together in Nicaragua.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So like, how has it changed in the last year?
Yeah. So again, you look at Portugal, for example. Like, I mean, so real estate at its kind of basis form, it's one buyer and it's one seller. It's, you know, different negotiating powers. It's, you know, there's nothing kind of blanket about it. So in Portugal, for example, we have seen the surge of demand in places like Lagos. At Rita, you know, a big part of what I do, as you know, is negotiate access to bulk deals on behalf of our members. So I use our group buying power to go in, get our members access to inventory before anyone else at better pricing. So it's been an incredible moment for us in Lagos because we've been able to get access to this inventory that everyone else wants and no one else can get their hands on. And it's a really hot market. You know, we've seen Rita members who've bought, say, condos 2 years ago for 400 grand. They're now selling for 640, 660. And, you know, when you consider you can buy here with 80% finance for 1%, you know, those type of cash on cash gains are just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's
so that's the Algarve. But when you look at Portugal as a whole, the economy was just hammered by the pandemic. So, I mean, last year, Portugal had seen the biggest contraction since, I think, the tail end of the Second World War. You know, it's just the economy was just hammered because it was just so heavily dependent on tourism. So in areas like where I was able to buy north of Lisbon, I was able to get a fire sale deal because I was able to buy from a motivated seller from Lisbon. So we have opportunities in strong markets. If we're in at the ground floor, we've opportunities in crisis scenarios where there's motivated sellers. We have opportunities where our group buying power can have a real value. So for example, in a Mexican resort town, you know, our Rita group comes together, you know, we say that we expect that our group will take the first 100 condos in the community and we get 30 or 40 grand each off on every condo. So it really is very, very, very micro.
Well, I've been enjoying the texts that you have been sending out, and you can just correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the number of texts that are offering new deals has increased over the last like 2 to 3 months. It feels like the deal flow.
Yeah, absolutely. So when COVID hit, it was challenging and it was interesting, but a lot of the bigger projects got kind of, you know, paused. Let's wait and see. And then what we were able to do is, you know, with these developers that we trust in and that we believe in and we've observed over time the quality of their work, we were able to say, you know, why don't you do something that's relatively low risk, like a smaller community, one that, you know, our group will by and large have it fully allocated in a matter of hours. So, you know, there's very strong uptake in that because these developers want to do something that's extremely low risk. You know, they want to keep their infrastructure going, but they don't want to be necessarily, you know, starting a 500 to 700 unit project because, you know, maybe the first 30% of units move quickly, but, you know, who knows what could be around the next corner.
Yeah.
So,
so,
it's,
So with the pool that you put together, you're able to actually approach the contractors and the developers and propose things. That's new to me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, these are people who, you know, we will have had relationships with for.
Right, that's what I mean. But now you can like kind of be like, hey, man.
Exactly. So, you know, for example, last year in Tulum, a new project called Natal, we were talking to this developer, you know, and we still are about something a much bigger scale thing. And everyone said, you know, this feels risky for an environment when we don't really know what's around the corner. Why don't you do something that's more bite-sized chunks? And then, you know, we understand their numbers, we understand what's under the bonnet of their business. So we can expect pricing that's in line with, you know, a fair margin for the developer and an excellent deal for the RETA member.
That's awesome. So I think one of the best things we could do right now is suggest that, and we'll put it at the bottom of the video, but let's get people on your text, because that's what the way I've been following you. We do have the email that goes out, and that goes out, I think, weekly, but the text is the way I've been following you. So we can put that, if you want to say it, you can do that too, but we can just throw it at the bottom of the video. And I think it's a good idea, because
yeah. I
text and I'm like, man, Tulum, seriously? Let's go. Yeah,
that would be great, because it you guys do the texting. We're a bit slow on that, but it's the AF.
Text is working. Well, it's working for me.
Yeah. I know, but over on the kind of the IL published version of it, we haven't been texting yet. So there you go. That's my testimonial now to...
Yeah, maybe we should do that too. No, it's just a good way to like... Because the way it works for me is the text comes out and then I read the text and then I click on it and it goes right to the email.
Yeah.
And it's usually you who's written it. And then I go, oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting how I consume as well. You know, I mean, all the people I like to follow, I'll see their emails coming into my inbox and that'll kind of trigger something in me, but I'll generally go to a website and look at it on my iPad, because my iPad is for reading. I don't get any email on it. So it's kind of, I'm often find myself texting links to myself because I don't want email on my iPad. I don't want Slack on my iPad. Addison, let me tell you a good story about the impact of the pandemic on things. So when things started kind of shuttering down, we, within my team, we had this little Slack group called Property Porn, and we would put up these cool little properties.
Steal that phrase, by the way.
It's trademarked. So our Property Porn channel featured these really, really dreamy and inexpensive properties all around the world. So we had a lot kind of dreamy properties under 100 grand price point. And then we also had a category that were more like dream mansions that were maybe $500,000. But, you know, you're getting a palace in the Italian countryside. So I thought to myself, geez, I should start putting these up on Instagram. So myself and my wife, one Saturday evening, you know, there was a lull in the conversation or there was nothing on TV or something. So we said, why don't we set up an Instagram account and put some of those pictures up there? So I chugged along, and then we were in Mexico. My wife's Mexican. And I remember after the first couple of weeks we had posted, and I'm complete social media novice. So, and her niece and her nephew were there, and I was there, you know, please, will you like that post? Because we only have 7 likes. And Addison, then something happened and the world went mad. And in a couple of months, we just upped about 250,000 followers. Just there was just this surge of interest in property porn.
I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, it's just this frenzy. It's an interesting thing, you know. I think there's a combination of people locked in their houses, people with an itch, and you know, I think everything.
Also, I really think, and I've seen this in our readership, that people are just reevaluating their lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is like, I mean, I'm doing the same thing. So, yeah. Like, it's totally natural when the world seems like it's. Do you like this phrase, cattywampus?
I've never heard it. Go on, explain.
It just means it all went to hell.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all cattywampus.
Yeah.
And when that happens, like it's a total natural reaction to react to be like, oh, like what's our life all about?
Yeah.
One of the major assets that you own in your life is property. And it could be one or two or three. We have three. But like, I'm reevaluating that right now. Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And a lot of people, and I think that's a lot of people that talk to you are reevaluating. They might be looking for like rental property in Panama, or they might be interested in changing their lives a little bit so that they could move to Portugal or something like that, like just a change, and they have enough capital to imagine what that's going to be like. And then you have all these places that you can look at. And I literally think that's what you mean by property porn.
Absolutely. Just that kind of that vicarious, just that, you know, it's like, I'm a fan and an addict, you know. I mean, I love sitting in bed Sunday morning just looking at listings, you know, of yeah. And then I guess I like it much, much more when there's an edge, when there's a hack, or where there's an angle where you can use it to make a lot of money to create.
Like, this is the way I think about it. What if it just pays for itself?
Yeah.
A lot of people just do that. They're like, okay, I'm going to live in Portugal in the Algarve for 2 weeks a year, and the rest of the time I'll just rent it.
Yeah. But the Algarve as a market is phenomenal in the sense that you could cover the full cost of your 80% loan to value mortgage, plus all your property taxes, plus all your HOAs, all of that for renting for just 10 months, 10 summer months. So it is, I mean, you literally, you
so that literally gives you 2 months to live there.
Sorry, Addison, 10 summer weeks, I meant 10 summer weeks.
Jeez, that's even better.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so the Silver Coast, north of Lagos, I left my home there 6 weeks ago now. I've already got in 8 months worth of total costs of ownership just in those 6 weeks, 8 months of mortgage plus property taxes plus HOA plus golf club memberships plus Wi-Fi, everything in. So I went to the Algarve just before I came here, tail end of last year, and found myself in the right place at the right time, in a meeting with the bank. And lo and behold, they had a bank, a repossession in the luxurious community of Valdelobo. I was able to buy no money down, 100% mortgage at just about 1% for €410,000. There's an identical condo for sale today in the same community, just a building over, for €830,000, and it rents for €3,500 per week now.
And people are renting it.
They are. Now, this, we've just opened it up to rental 2 weeks ago. We straight away got the first 2 weeks full. So we're in our first season. So it hasn't been, it isn't full all of this month, because literally we just got it ready for rental. And so you can generate, you know, positive cash flow very, very fast, you know, once you buy right. And I guess that's what my real estate trend alert is. That's what we do, you know, between me and my team is, you know, it's not just about buying real estate. It's buying the right real estate for your needs, whether that's income or capital appreciation, or even if it's just you're looking for a bolt hole in the countryside to figure out how to buy that right. And you know, it's interesting about how, you know, just right now, one of my team, Owen, he's in the Algarve. Another one of my team, Paul, he's getting ready to go to Italy, and then from Italy onto Montenegro. I'm going to Portugal in a couple of weeks. You know, some of the rest of the team are going to be in the Riviera Maya, Mexico, week after next. Then I go, you know, we've got this team and infrastructure now that are out in all these places, finding opportunity and, you know, filtering it back into the mothership. Because the thing is, if you think back through your lifetime and think of the kind of the real estate opportunities that you've observed either in person or from a distance in different parts of the States, you know, at any moment in time, that exact situation is playing out somewhere. You know, at that moment in time, there's a new coastline being opened up. There's a new area that's hot for some commodity. There are big things happening that are driving real estate values. So when you make the world your oyster, and when you're open and willing to travel and take an open mind, there's always opportunity somewhere.
Well, also the other thing, and this is probably a lesser point, but what I value too, is just reading. Like, I enjoy the armchair, because I already have my things going on, right?
Yeah.
But I like reading about them. I like reading about where you are and stuff, like the deals that you find and the ones that you're putting together. I think it's just like, oh man.
Yeah.
it's really entertaining. Yeah. So I think that there's a component that for that too, even if in my situation, if I'm kind of locked into my daughter's becoming a sophomore in high school and we're kind of locked into our place right now, I still enjoy sort of daydreaming.
The vicarious read, Rob. I mean, I
that's
do.
How you started, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and I do too, you know. I mean, so we've got this like WhatsApp scouting group, you know, where members of my team, you know, every they're sending in their videos and photos all the time. Like, I mean, and when I say all the time, I don't mean every other day. I mean, you know, 30 minutes. And this week I've been saving them. I've been saying, I don't want to watch Netflix tonight. I want to watch what my team is sending me from the road. You know, it just doesn't feel that's like awesome. Work. So this is the problem I always have, Addison, is like, what would I do if I gave up my job? I'd probably do the same thing, but just not get paid for it.
You know, it's funny. I worked at the Cato Institute for a while, and I wasn't getting paid very much. And this is a long time ago. This is like 30 years ago. But if I was working here and I stopped working, what would I do? I would just do the same thing.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, that's kind of the business that we...
So quick question for you. When you say the economy was ruined in 2 years, are you thinking lockdowns or handouts for not working or just the...
I think it's a combination of that, like regulation changes. I mean, obviously the benefits were necessary. Like when they did the lockdowns and people didn't have money, like, what's going to happen then?
Yeah. You know?
end up with Revolution at that point. And we wrote about that for months. But then they didn't want to give up the benefits, so people don't want to go back to work. I mean, there's a lot of like components to that. And we published a lot about this stuff. And what Jim Rickards calls it is the new Great Depression. And he's like, this is going to go on for a while because you can't just shut down the economy on a policy level and then expect it to start back up again because the incentive structures don't match up anymore. And so a lot of what we've been writing about is we're trying to figure out how those incentive structures get restarted. And then also you've got like the online culture that you and I are involved in. And then like the retail delivery of like groceries and stuff like that, that ramped way up. We're like learning a new way of living. And we don't have any, there's no incentives in place for people to go back to work for like an airline or something like that. So I think it's going to be dicey for a while. And that's part of why I wanted to talk to you, because that impacts people's willingness to buy real estate. Because like we have real estate in Nicaragua. We just can't go there.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose Nicaragua is its own particular difficult case. So yeah, nothing is clear. Yeah. I mean, if it was the case of...
I think that's going to be the case for a while. But in the meantime, like what's the investing phrase we use all the time? The time to buy is when blood is in the streets, right? Yeah. Right now, it's property value time. You can buy stuff for cheap.
You can buy stuff that's positioned to do extremely well in, you know, kind of pretty much, irrespective of how things shake out, you know. So, for example, RETA members have been buying, you know, two bed, two bath condos, 206 steps from a beautiful beach, an hour from Panama City. You know, it's an area that, you know, with some new infrastructure improvements is going to be more commutable. You've got tourism growth, you know, you're buying for less than replacement value because you're getting this deep value because of this tax bailout.
I think it's a good time to buy. If you have cash, we've always said this, we've been this for years. If the world looks like shit and you have a pile of cash, this is the time to buy stuff because it's cheap.
Yeah. In the right places, selectively. Yeah.
That's correct. All right, man.
A pleasure, Addison, as always.
I can't see you in person.
Yeah, well, I can't get in. I can only get.
I can't visit you.
you can visit me now, but I can't visit you.
I can go to France. We can meet up there, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. But I can visit you via Mexico. I'm allowed in.
Maybe I can just go to Mexico.
That sounds a lot better. Cabo it is in November.
Okay, there we go.
Take care, Addison. See you. Bye. All right.
You can get in on deals while they last by signing up for Ronan McMahon's newsletter today at Real Estate Trend Alert.